Welcome.
Hi, I'm Allison Thompson.
And I'm Scott Fratcher, and you're listening to Radio for Peace International, broadcasting from El Rodeo, Costa Rica.
We have Benjamin Quinto in the studio today. He's the director of Global Youth Action Network.
Benjamin Quinto, the director of Global Youth Action Network, has recently combined forces with Taking It Global.
Taking It Global is about encouraging young people to believe in themselves and their ability to make a difference in the world. They create environments where people are exposed to new thinking, a diversity of voices, and new opportunities. Driven by youth, their goal is to foster a sense of leadership and social entrepreneurship through the innovative use of technology, creating meaningful experiences for young people around the world. In partnership with the Global Youth Action Network, they offer recognition for youth action and support for youth voice.
What is poverty? Is it the presence of hunger? Is it the lack of shelter? Is poverty not having a job? Is it living one day at a time? Does poverty represent powerlessness, lack of recognition and freedom? Bush says Taylor must go. And who will save Liberia?
These are some of the topics being discussed by youth who log on to takingitglobal.org.
Welcome to the studio, Benjamin. And how did you get started with this organization and this website?
It's much more than a website, if you will. Actually, the website is only the part of our work. Less than 2% of the population is online, and our goal is to connect up all of the young people who want to see a better world or who are working to create it. So we actually have an expansive network of youth organizations around the world, as much as we have a website. And how I got started, I was in New York studying to become an actor at the Performing Arts High School and wanting to entertain people and bring joy into their lives, but found that there were underlying sadnesses that most young people had and very little hope for the future. And I thought it wouldn't be sufficient alone to entertain them for a short while and distract them from the problems, better yet to look at the problems themselves and what was crushing the hope of people at large. So a friend of mine dragged me along to the United Nations and exposed me to the organization. I'd never been in a room full of people whose lives were committed to changing the world, and it was quite an experience. But when I looked around the room, I saw that I was the youngest by over 30 years and thought that there's got to be a piece missing here.
Would you give us an example of how a youth would be able to utilize your website and organization?
Sure. Well, the organization Global Youth Action Network focuses more on the relationship between organizations. So young people who have started a project or who are part of an organization that wish to connect to others and share resources and information and better coordinate their efforts. But young people who want to connect to the movement that's out there of other young people and know this, that there are more young people working towards social causes or towards social change than perhaps ever before in history. So young people should feel that they're not alone out there if they want to see a better world, and that there are millions and hundreds of millions out there actively working in their communities to change them. So simply logging on to www.takingitglobal.org, takingitglobal.org, is the best way to connect. And we have tens of thousands of young people who have signed up on the website, and you can find organizations, information on key issues, research, papers, conferences. We have perhaps the most comprehensive calendar of youth-related events going on all around the world. So there are a dozen and one ways to connect to other young people, organizations, and a wealth of opportunities out there to get involved.
Okay, and takingitglobal.org is one word.
It is.
Okay. So, for example, let's say that there was a youth listening to this on shortwave, worldwide shortwave that we're broadcasting on, and he heard this in Panama and wanted to hook up with other people of like minds. How would he go about doing that?
Several different ways. First of all, if there's access to the internet in their community, in many communities at this point, at least there's an internet cafe or a library that provides access to the internet. And by logging onto the website, that's one way to hook up. The other is to go to their organizations. What we found is that there are youth organizations or youth-friendly organizations in most communities around the world. And there are very few opportunities for young people to get meaningfully involved in any kind of social change in their community. But that doesn't mean that those opportunities aren't there. So simply by talking to their friends, sharing their hopes for the future is a great way to start connecting to others who might be able to support them on their path. So connecting up to youth organizations and connecting up to the larger network of youth organizations worldwide is another way. And, you know, going through churches or through their schools or through the library systems is yet another way.
And you say youth organizations. How do you define youth?
We define young people very broadly, generally under 30. The UN defines youth as 15 to 24, but we found that to be quite limiting. And young people just below or just above the age range still wanted to get involved, and we didn't want to exclude them. And part of the very nature of our work is focused on intergenerational cooperation, because honestly, what we found is that adults have not solved the problems of the world, and children certainly cannot solve them alone. But together, somehow, we can make things better.
And what would you consider a startling success of your organization so far?
You know, when I started, I really thought if the only thing we ever accomplish with this project is simply to create a network of friends around the world, if young people could feel themselves connected to other young people in other countries and other regions and somehow feel like they were part of this common generation with common hopes for the future, that even if that friendship alone was the only thing that we succeeded in creating, that 20 years down the line, we would have eliminated war. When all of these young people got into positions of power and were the ones who themselves were making the key decisions and with their finger on the trigger, that they would think twice before sending a bomb across a border to another country. Think twice about any kind of effect their actions would have, because they would have friends all over the place. And people ask me all the time, what is the thing you're most proud of in having done this work? And it's without a doubt the network of friends. We know the most extraordinary young people on the planet, some of whom aren't known, some of whom appear on Oprah all the time, you know, young people of all kinds, who really provide the most awesome inspiration to me, the greatest motivation. And that alone, I think, is our most valuable asset, the relationship and friendships we have with each other and how that carries forth our commitment for a better world.
Oh, I was wanted to go back to the definition of youth, and was taking it global initially directed toward youth? That's the webpage that you've recently combined with.
Right. Well, actually, no, they were not as focused on young people, although they seem to have been slightly more focused on young people as a result of them all being average age 20 and as a result of also working with us. But their efforts have always been more focused on the individual and helping them to realize their potential and to fulfill it through the support and access to information, technology, and resources. And so it's been a wonderful pairing of our efforts, them with a focus on individuals and us with a focus on organizations, and together creating this website, which is probably one of the heaviest trafficked in the youth NGO sector. It's really, really quite something. The website itself, over 2 million hits a week. And for a nonprofit website to get that is, I think, pretty significant in and of itself.
Something else that you mentioned was that on the website that there's a resource of information about each and every country, or at least 130 countries that are out there.
191. And more than that, there's actually 250 countries and territories in the world, according to the CIA.
And what would you find on your website about, let's say, if you just randomly picked a country or territory?
Sure. Say you pick Nigeria and you go to http://nigeria.tickingitglobal.org. It will pull up a web page that's matched even in its colors to the colors of the flag of the country. It will tell you key statistics about the country, the population, the religions, the square mileage, all kinds of information about the country, including members on the website who live there, featured events that are going on in that country, organizations that are operating there, as well as just tons of other information that's relevant to the country or activities that are taking place. And you can also do that for regions. You can go to africa.takingitglobal.org, and it will likewise highlight organizations, events, and young people from that region, and maybe even spotlight some initiatives that are worthy of looking into.
And so there would be ways on the website then to, like, for example, list an organization or a march or a protest that's going to happen in the future, and then to have other organizations be able to read that and say, for example, if somebody in Nigeria was attempting to have a protest over a particular issue, and people in Panama then could say, well, that issue is important to us, and we're going to have our own protests simultaneously to correlate with this. That type of thing is on your website.
Absolutely. Any organization, any individual, anyone really can post. They can list their organization in the database. They can add an event to the calendar. And better yet, once you add an event to the calendar, other young people can go, I want to participate in that event. And they can basically mark that they're going to be a participant and therefore be connected with all the other young people who have also marked themselves as potential participants, and therefore begin the conversation beforehand. In our organization, if you don't mind me telling you, we have a saying: when we talk about events, we call them poofs. Because there's so many events that take place all over the world, and there's all of this energy and time and resources that goes into creating the event, all of this massive amount of momentum building up towards the event, and the event happens, and it's poof, and it's huge cloud, and everyone sees it, and it starts to dissipate, and then it dissipates forever. And so little of the energy that went into leading up to that event and during it is captured and is kept ongoing. And that's a big problem, especially with young people. There's a lot of turnover in our sector because young people age out and they move on. So how do we collect the intellectual, the experiential capital that comes out of these? And how do we capitalize on these events that are taking place and better link them with each other so that there's a building process that emerges from them? And so these tools that are on the website hopefully will help to provide greater continuity between these events so young people can start these conversations before going to the event, so they don't come there and have to have all the conversations from scratch. They can do a lot of the thinking beforehand, your homework, if you will, and then come to the event, already have a connection with the other participants who are there, therefore have deeper, more fruitful dialogues, and then continue the conversations online. Even go so far as to use the project management tool on the website. If you go to projects.takingitglobal.org, there's so much functionality on this site, I could not describe it all right now. But if you go to projects.takingitglobal.org, you can start a project emerging from an event and then tie it to an event. So when you click on the event, you can see pictures from the event that young people have uploaded, reports that emerged, see who attended, read other information pertinent to the issues that were addressed at the event, and then even see the projects that were launched. And any participant can start this project. Other young people can sign up. They can upload documents, maintain a kind of summary of activities and news related to the project. So much, really.
If you have just tuned in, this is listener-sponsored Radio for Peace International, an independent global community forum, broadcasting worldwide from Costa Rica. I am Allison Thompson, and we are talking with Benjamin Quinto, the director of Global Youth Action Network.
I'd like to tell you a little bit more about the network of organizations, because really that's the vision that we kind of got off the ground with. Knowing that there were all of these young people out there who have started projects, young people, you know, sometimes as young as 9, 11, 12, 14, who start an organization, never really an organization, they maybe start a project that evolves into this organization. Craig Kielberger is probably one of the best known ones. When at age 12 or so, he started Free the Children, and after reading in the newspaper that these young boys and girls were being basically sold into slavery and weaving carpets and under horrible conditions, and started an organization that today is a multi-million-dollar agency that has built schools around the world and done incredible amounts for young people in servitude. So there are all of these young people who have created these organizations, but a lot of them are operating usually almost in a vacuum in their own communities, disconnected from the world at large, and perhaps having some level of impact, but on minimal resources with minimal recognition. But again, all of these these organizations clear throughout the world. I would take a guess and say there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them. And that represents a huge potential. The capacity young people have to create change, the vision and originality and hope they bring with them is priceless. So if we could figure out better ways of maximizing the potential that they represent, we would have stand a greater chance of changing the world. So our goal with the Global Youth Action Network was to try and connect up all of these different organizations, try and combine all of the intellectual capital before these young people continue aging out, create a central information and resource clearinghouse in which all of these young people and organizations would have access to, and through the sharing of information and resources, better collaborate. Because in the NGO sector at large, it's been obvious that there's been competition. And in the nonprofit sector, that's just about the stupidest thing that can happen, for organizations to be competing with each other for time, for attention, for money. So we wanted to see if we could get all of these young people working together, link all these organizations, create this dynamic network that was proactive in nature and based on the principles of sharing and cooperation. And we have. We've connected hundreds, thousands actually of organizations in over 180, 190 countries. And the power they have together is quite awesome. Our biggest project, which is probably the best known one, we coordinate jointly with Youth Service America, and it's called Global Youth Service Day. It emerged from a successful initiative they'd been doing for about 12 years called National Youth Service Day, and they came to us and said, what about doing it global? What about taking it global? Pardon the pun. And we said, absolutely. We didn't have any really big projects at that point and wanted to change the level of recognition that the world had about the potential that young people represented. So we launched this celebration, and within 2 years, it's now been 4 years, we had made it the largest celebration of young volunteers in the world. Each year, over 1 million young people in 150 countries come out to participate in thousands of volunteer projects, and we use this mass mobilization as a way to create awareness for the positive contributions that young people are making, as well as to recruit more young people into working towards social causes. Just an interesting side note on the angle of creating recognition for young people's positive contributions. There's a great chasm, a misperception that the public has about young people. On one hand, you have youth, 70% of whom feel like they have little or no voice in adult society. It's a huge problem when young people grow up and feel that nobody wants to hear what they have to say. There's very little hope they have for their own future if they can't participate in creating it. And on the other hand, you've got 58 to 60% of adults who feel that young people are making the situation worse. So that chasm creates this wall, this division between the generations. And it's quite saddening to know that adults have little hope in young people. Young people have little hope in the adult population. And the world's problems continue to worsen. So there was a study that the Department of Justice did, and this was just in the United States, but they studied youth violence and its reporting in the media, and found out that in between 1992 and 2000, that there was a drop in youth violence of 40%. That's really quite a significant drop. That's by half in 8 years. And that's perhaps the biggest misperception that adults have about young people, is that they're violent, apathetic, uninvolved, disinterested, all of these things. They're all misperceptions, definitely, or overgeneralizations. So in between 1992 and 2000, youth violence dropped 40%. Negative reporting of young people in the media in that same time frame rose 383%. Really just fueling the misperception that's out there. That's one of the things that we want to change. We want to prove that young people can play an active and effective role in building the kind of society we've all been dreaming and talking about for decades.
And the internet has provided one mode of media that youth can access and use. How about other modes of media, paper, television, radio? Are you looking in that direction?
Absolutely. One of our initiatives, our side initiatives, is to connect up all the youth media reporting groups. There are a lot of youth media groups all around the world. In fact, we just gave an award. One of our other programs is to give $1,000 awards to young people who start a project that improves their community as a way to recognize them, so little recognition is out there, and as a way to encourage other young people to get involved and do something positive. So one of the awards that we gave away last year went to this young woman who's 17, perhaps now 18, in Vietnam, who started a group called Young Voices of Vietnam. And she has a radio show that broadcasts weekly, I think, to about 20 million young people. And this is just one young person. And she has this actually a network of youth reporters throughout the country, about 100 of them, I think, who go and cover events. And there are dozens and hundreds and maybe even thousands of these kinds of groups. So we're trying to connect them up too and working with other youth media groups. We never want to do it all. There's so much that we want to do. Young people are boundless, have boundless energy, it seems, and perhaps a little limited simply by having too much vision sometimes. But by working, we want to always work with people who are working in the area that's a specialty for them, to link up people who have common vision, who are working in similar areas, and try and get them to combine their efforts somehow more effectively. Because really, there's been the social change movement for decades. Young people and older people alike have been trying to change the system for a long time. But honestly, it's not changed to the degree that it needs to. The problems that we're facing are worsening. The statistics are rising. And as much as people are getting involved, it doesn't seem to be creating enough change. So that really just lends greater credibility to, or greater credence to the need for intergenerational cooperation. So as much as we focus on young people and put the priority on people under 30, we do work with a wide age range of people.
Yes, you mentioned the, or you used the word aging out earlier. I was wondering what you meant by that, or I was, got me thinking anyways.
Sure. Well, you know, young people, it's a very volatile time in your life. So you're in high school, you may join a group at your high school. You may join the recycling group. You may join the Boy Scouts in middle school. It's not necessarily that you continue that when you move on to the next level of education. In fact, a lot of young people in the projects that they're involved with or the organizations from high school to college, they change. And even from college, when they move into the working life, they're really like four-year segments almost that you have. So young people age out, quote unquote, really as a way of moving on into other fields. And we want to provide, again, such as with events that are out there, a continuity so that if they're involved with something, if they're involved with an organization, that they find another one that better suits the new path they're on or the new consciousness that they've come into, to support them always in the path to creating social change around them. And it's really just a matter of making available opportunities. I'm reminded just of a conversation. I'm here visiting one of my dearest advisors, who I have a great amount of respect for. And we were speaking before, and I was sharing with him the fact that I have a very simple equation to solve all the problems of the world, and which we try to use in doing our work. It's really a three-step process. The first is to educate. There's a lack of education or proper education in the world. And by that, I mean not just the formal systems of education, but people by and large are not aware of the problems that we're facing as a planet, are not aware of the severity of the issues that we're facing. And unless they're educated about them, the chances of changing them diminish every day. But once you educate people and you allow them to better understand what kind of things they're facing, you have to provide an avenue for empowerment or engagement. Because when someone starts to know that young people are dying, that trees are being felled, that rivers are being polluted, chances are they'll want to do something. And if you can make it easier and palatable enough for them to take some tangible steps to solve the problem, greater chances exist that they will. And the third, which I think is really the greatest missing piece, is that of accountability. Because there is no system other than the national ones to hold individuals accountable. There are systems created by corporations these days that cannot even be held accountable by the state or by the country. And certainly internationally, there's no system of accountability to hold countries accountable for their decisions, as was illustrated by recent actions in the international scene. So really, it's very simple in my mind, and if we could just incorporate a simple system into society whereby we properly educate people, provide an avenue for them to participate in decision-making, and then create formal structures that hold individuals, corporations, and governments accountable for their actions, we'll see the kind of world we've been dreaming of.
Inspirational.
But young people are perhaps, you know, adults always talk. Young people are the future. Young people are the hope for the future. But there's a lot of tokenism out there. And if adults and systems that exist, the structures that be, would make greater efforts to involve young people in all levels of their decision making, not only would it kind of renew their efforts and provide hopefully a longer term sustainability for their work, but it would also help to create greater opportunities, like I said before, for young people to feel that they're part of the solution. And too often they've been told that they're part of the problem or part of the solution in ways that doesn't really involve them the way that they hope to be. So really, just involve young people. Young people are waiting to be involved, are waiting to build a better world, and are only looking for the hand to reach out and offer the opportunity to them.
You talked about the young woman in Vietnam, I believe, that was running a radio station. Can you tell us about a few more projects that young people are running?
There's so many of them, and I try to keep a roster of at least a few in my head, because to tell their stories is really incredible. And actually, I wrote about 6 or 7 months ago, 12 pages of stories, just little snippets into these extraordinary lives that very few people know about because they're so inspiring. So aside from Lan An, who's the young woman in Vietnam, I'll go through some of our award winners, because we try to give these $1,000 awards away. And in the States, they're not very much, but in other countries, sometimes they'll support a project for a year. So there's a young man in Indiana called Jason Crow. I think he's about 15 now, but we gave him an award when he was 12 or 13. He started a project after hearing about the war in Bosnia and about hearing about this cellist called Vedran Smilovic, who went, there was a bombing that took place and people were waiting in a bread line, and about a dozen people were killed by a bomb that left a crater in front of the bakery. And it was really quite tragic. And Vedran, I'm sorry to go on, but it's an interesting story. Vedran went and took his cello and sat there in full gown and played for 12 days nonstop where those people had died, for the number of days, for the number of people who had perished by the bomb. And much the way that Craig Kielberger, who is another great story, perhaps the most often told story, who started Free the Children, was inspired by an article in the newspaper. Jason Crow was also inspired when he read about this cellist and thought if he could perhaps get young people together from around the world to each raise money and help create a monument to honor this man who had honored the people who had died, and present that monument as a gift from the children of the world to the Bosnian government, that they'd remember the kind of ideals of peace and hopes that the children brought with them. So that's another one. There are young people who are starting internet cafes in places like Rwanda in order to bring that kind of connectivity to the community, but not only to bring that connection point to their peers, but also to create a livelihood out of it. Because another group that we work with called the Youth Employment Summit points out the fact that in the next 20 years, in the next coming years, there's about 500 million young people entering the workforce without jobs for them, which is going to be a devastating situation. So we work with a lot of groups who are kind of starting entrepreneurial activities and try and provide support through other avenues for them to get their businesses off the ground. So I'm reminded of a young man, Frank Mukama, in Rwanda, who is starting one right now, who just got a grant to do it, creating sustainable livelihoods for him and his peers and his community, and giving them a connection point outside the world. There's also political youth parties that have been created in Bosnia that have helped to bring down Milosevic, political movements that have really changed countries. Hafsat Abiola in Nigeria, who's still within the youth age range, whose mother was a democracy activist murdered in the streets. Her father was then elected president of Nigeria, imprisoned, and died in prison. And Hafsat went on to create an organization in honor and memory of her mother called the Kudarat Institute for Nigerian Democracy. I think its new name is Kudarat Initiative for Democracy. But who has really had a significant impact in her country, which has a very interesting situation there, and has helped to build schools and educate people about the problems. Oh, there are so many amazing stories. And I want to put together a book and publish them of these because they're so inspiring and motivating. And when anybody thinks anything ill of young people, they should pick up a book like this and be reminded what young people represent.
Let's see, we're broadcasting from Costa Rica. I wonder if you have any stories from the Central or Latin American continent you could share with us.
There are so many stories. This is a very active continent, and we group Latin America and the Caribbean together. And we, a year and a half ago, opened up an office in Sao Paulo to serve the Latin American Caribbean region. Also, by the way, we're opening up one in South Africa for Africa, in Stockholm for Europe, and in Manila, Philippines for Asia. It's always been our goal to separate the network into regions and better manage it, since there are different languages and cultural sensitivity issues that need to be addressed to make the information relevant. So yes, we have an office in Sao Paulo that works to bring young people together and coordinate their efforts in the region. And most, if not, probably about 70-80% of the countries in this region participate in Global Youth Service Day, like I said, our largest project. Even here in Costa Rica and San Jose, there are three organizations that work together with us. Among them, Covenant House, and then there's the National Program of Volunteers, and then there's the Fundación Laberinto, and of course, there's also the University for Peace, where we are here, which is an inspiring thing for us all.
For those of you who have just joined us, you're tuned to listener-sponsored Radio for Peace International, broadcasting worldwide from El Rodeo, Costa Rica. We have Benjamin Quinto in the studio. He is the director of Global Youth Action Network.
I've heard you mention grants, awards, and funding several times. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how you gather the funds necessary to help operate and support all these active young people.
We get funding a number of ways. We focus particularly on foundations and individuals. Most of our funding comes from them, but also through contract work by coordinating projects for or with other organizations. There is decidedly so a lack of funding that's available for young people to work on their dreams, which is a pity, because young people bring innovative ideas and new thought patterns that could potentially create greater change than those systems that have been previously employed. So we go after a lot of foundation grants and individuals, and we try and raise enough money so that we can give it away as well, but in the form of these awards. We don't provide grants because that's a lot more administration that's needed. And we also help to offset people's costs sometimes to participate in conferences. Not so much, really, because that's the greatest need that young people always have. Oh, I've been selected to go to this conference. It's going to change my life. Can you fund my travel there? And travel is one of the things that is most difficult for young people because it's very costly, especially coming from developing countries. But sometimes we've sponsored young people to participate in the General Assembly. In 2000, we helped two delegates from the Global South, from countries that have never sent young people as part of their delegations. And as a result, that year, we set a record number of young people participating as official delegates to the General Assembly.
The General Assembly, can you elaborate on that just a little bit more?
Sure. The United Nations General Assembly is the key governing council of the institution. It includes 191 member states, and delegations are sent from each country to represent the country in decision-making processes there. And ever since the inception of the UN in 1945, ever since they have called for the participation of young people, and for the last 30 years now, they have actively promoted the request to member states to include official youth in their delegations to the General Assembly. Historically, only about 5 or 7 countries have included it. Denmark, Netherlands, Norway, and maybe Sweden set the precedent by including them regularly, but other countries sporadically or never, mostly. And so that's been one of the mandates that we've been working on. My vision originally was to create a United Nations Youth Assembly to provide a global body in which young people from all around the world could participate in creating the future they stood to inherit. And over the course of 3.5 years, realized that what we didn't need was another political body. What we needed was simply to combine our efforts and raise our voices louder and clearer to the sky in order to be heard. So that's why we created the Global Youth Action Network. And eventually we will create something like a United Nations or Global Youth Assembly. It's still in our plans. But we help young people to become official delegates in the General Assembly by promoting the mandate, by appealing to governments, and by creating whatever support we can to young people who stand a chance of actually participating, and providing them with tools and resources of how to lobby their governments, what the mandate is, and how to use it to their advantage, and the kind of processes that lead up to the selection of an official youth delegate.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. If a young person heard this and was inspired and really wanted to participate in the United Nations Youth Assembly and their country wasn't sending a youth representative at that time, what would be the direction they might move?
Well, to participate in the General Assembly would be a very big feat for any young person, and there are a lot of young people who do want to participate in it. But there is a process by which the government should be appealed to. The Ministry of Youth and Education is a great way to start. Their delegate to the UN is a great way as well. The consulate general. But in particular, it's good also to go through established channels that young people have of working with the government. They should first and foremost seek out if there's a national youth council in their country. And if there is, connect to it. Become a member if they're not. Because if, in most cases, being part of that national youth council gives that young person a certain level of legitimacy to be considered as a candidate. Because to truly represent young people's voices or the youth of that country, there warrants some kind of experience. I mean, we don't have just the average Joe Schmo going to be our parliamentarian, because you want that person to know the issues, to be versed, and to be able to represent them effectively. So getting involved with your National Youth Council is one of the best ways to start, and then making the appropriate inroads to governments, and then seeking out the support and endorsement of organizations like ours to help rally further support and awareness for these candidates. And then to use the stories of young people who have participated in the past to lend credibility and value to their participation. We actually have an interview or two with young people who have participated as official delegates, and you can read that interview and also read the 10 steps to becoming a youth delegate, which makes it very simple. We have a whole section on it called Voice, and within the Voice section is a part on United Nations Youth Delegates, which delineates the specifics of the program. And again, this is not a program that we administer or coordinate, but we help to achieve its goals. The United Nations has called forever for the participation of young people, has clearly laid out this mandate and invited governments to send youth delegates. Now it's just a matter of holding them to task, getting the governments to pay attention, and putting good young candidates forward to become those delegates.
Back to the funding issue again, if someone were so inclined to want to help out your organization, how would they go about doing that?
Donations are always welcome. They serve to support us. And I was looking for a quote from one of our advisors who made an appeal to the public to support the kind of work that is being done by young people, because often the institutions that have been established to support this kind of work don't really provide the kind of funding that's needed to young people themselves. There are youth who have tremendous leadership capacity, as perhaps some of these stories have illustrated, that need to be supported. Young people do not lack experience in the way that people think. Their thinking, their new ways of organizing, of working, can perhaps create much greater effect than those that have been employed in the past. And there's a great need to create that kind of support. And I should get right to the point. People who want to support our work should go onto the website and find our address, and they can make a check payable to Global Youth Action Network or a fiscal agent, Youth in Action, and mail it to our address. Alternatively, we soon will have a place online where they can make donations. And we're also looking for corporate sponsors. Companies who are responsible in their affairs. We don't want to be aligned with companies who are looking to use young people and their great efforts to create a better image for themselves in order to underwrite some of our programs, particularly the awards. The awards are a great thing. The kind of hope and support they create for young people all around the world are incredible, and the projects they work to support are admirable. And better yet, the return on investment is pretty much 10 projects to one that gets awarded that apply. So it's quite something. But again, checks should be made payable to Global Youth Action Network or Youth in Action and mailed to our headquarters in New York.
Now, socially responsible corporate sponsors, what kind of criteria do you have to consider corporate sponsors?
Well, luckily and unluckily, we haven't had to get very specific in that, because we haven't had companies knocking down at our door. But it would have things that we would consider are not clearly delineated in bulleted form, but they go, they are, you know, around the basic principles of does the product or do the products as, that that company creates support a better world or actually damage it? Is it a neutral product? Do they support other philanthropic initiatives? How much money do they give away? What kind of other projects do they support? And what kind of philosophies do the, does the company use? I mean, one that employs child labor in other countries would be next off the list in an instant. One that pollutes the environment would be next off the list. Ones that has created health damages among populations in other countries would certainly be disqualified from our consideration. But there's many that we would consider. You know, one of our, one of my other, or our other advisors is a woman who's perhaps one of the most powerful female fundraisers in the world. She's a phenomenal lady. And she said, money is like energy. You need to allow it to flow through you. When people start to hold on to it and grab onto it, it's like they become constipated and it becomes poisonous almost. So money is like a flow of energy that you need to allow to flow through you. And better yet, to take money from a place and put it to a higher purpose than simply turn it away and block it off in doing so. So I also believe to a certain degree, you know, people have criticized us at different points for working with institutions like the World Bank per se. But often there's a lot of misinformation out there. And there are institutions who are actively trying to do good who sometimes have a reputation that isn't so, or who sometimes are trying to change their reputation proactively by making changes within the administration of their institution. But taking money from one place and putting it towards a higher use is, in effect, putting that energy into a more positive place. And better to do that than say, no, we'll eat bread today and cake tomorrow.
And so you've mentioned advisors a few times. I'm a little curious about that group and who are some of your advisors. Can you tell us about them?
Absolutely.
Or the structure of that?
Oh, actually that's one of the things that I'm most proud of. We have a phenomenal advisory board. And these are people from all different levels of experience who bring with them certain expertise and knowledge that they've really become quite the specialist in and that we as young people could never in our small base of experience represent. So we try and get people who in the different areas, funding, media, marketing, outreach, organizations, event production, all of the different areas so that we can really diversify our base of operations and capitalize on their experience. So some of our most admired and respected, Dr. Robert Mueller, who I'm here visiting, who's the Chancellor Emeritus of the University for Peace and also the former Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations. Dr. Jane Goodall, the primatologist, who I adore dearly, perhaps is one of my greatest inspirations. Lynn Twist, who's the phenomenal fundraiser who I'd mentioned. Dr. Jonathan Granoff, who's been one of the leading proponents behind the campaign to ban nuclear arms and also heads up the Global Security Institute. Even Hafsat Abiola, who I had mentioned before, the young woman in Lanan, some of these young people who have just accomplished amazing things. So it's actually as much young people as it is adults. And we have over 40 people on the advisory board, and we intend to keep expanding it because as long as there are phenomenal, extraordinary people out there with this incredible experience behind them, why would we not try and bring their efforts together to create something beautiful?
And your position in the organization is?
Director of operations.
And about how many people do you have working on a regular, more or less regular basis?
More
in
or less regular. More or less regular being the key words in the nonprofit sector. Right now we're at a peak. We've been growing so much, it's really quite inspiring. We're up to about 20, 25 people. But that's about 8 people in our New York office, about 8 people in our South America office. Now about 5 regional coordinators, and another 8 or 10 satellite volunteers. So, for example, we have a young man in Nigeria and another one in Ghana who have really stepped forward, first and foremost, in organizing one of our programs there, and secondly, in wanting to take a more proactive role in coordinating activities throughout their country of all kinds relating to the network, so that we're now beginning to have kind of youth ambassadors or country coordinators, and therefore we'll have a much larger number of young people. But at this point, to have 20 or 25 is pretty phenomenal, we feel. And actually, if you combine that with the number of young people working for Taking It Global up in Toronto, whose efforts are coordinated closely, we probably number between 40 and 50, making us, I think, perhaps one of the largest youth-led organizations in the world.
When did your organization start up?
I had started when I was 17, wanting to create a United Nations Youth Assembly. And I wrote a proposal to the UN and submitted it, and that was in 1996. I didn't submit it in 1996. I worked on it for a couple of years. But by the time 1999 rolled around, that's when I realized that I had to abandon my dream and kind of figure out what the common dream of young people was and work towards that. And so in 1999, after a series of three conferences, we basically tabled the idea of a youth assembly and used the name Global Youth Network, and then actually very quickly renamed it to Global Youth Action Network because we wanted it to be proactive and speak to what it is we were trying to do. So in the summer of 1999 is when we started using the name Global Youth Action Network, and 6 months later we opened up our headquarters in New York, and a year and a half later we opened up our Sao Paulo office, and this year we'll open up in South Africa and at least one of Manila and Stockholm, if not both. We also have a focal point in the Middle East now in Lebanon, which I'm particularly excited about because there needs to be so much more communication between young people from the Middle Eastern and other regions. There's such a shelter over there and a need for greater dialogue because otherwise the conflict that has been pervasive there and elsewhere will just continue.
How do you facilitate the dialogue with the language differences? Does that affect the dialogue?
It absolutely does. Young people speak so many different languages. One of the interesting things is that English has become kind of the global language, I think largely due to the fact that technology uses it. And as technology has become pervasive and built the channels of communication globally that enable these kind of exchanges, English has been kind of the primary and needed language. But we translate our materials into other languages, most notably into Spanish, French, Portuguese, sometimes Mandarin, Russian, and Arabic. And when I put out newsletters for our biggest project, I write them in English, Spanish, and French, so at least they can reach a broader audience. And we're in the process of translating the website, which I think is the biggest challenge. You're talking about a site that can generate over a million pages and all of the functionality that needs to be replicated in all of the languages, but we're working on it because it has to be done. So we deal with the language barriers sometimes through translation, sometimes through very slow, open communication, and any other way we can. You know, young people still, if they don't have some command of the English language, have a little bit more of a harder time to connect to the network. But there is information that is available in at least the UN languages. That's what we try to cover. We'll never be able to cover them all, but our goal is to get them in six languages for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I have one thing I'd like to close with, I suppose. About 5 years ago, more or less, shortly after starting doing this work, I was attending a conference, and I was particularly struck when someone rose to the stage and started to talk about how just a couple of years earlier, the leading scientists of the world had come together and said that with the current trend, that unless we change the direction in terms of environmental devastation, come 20, 25 years' time, we would reach the point of irreversibility. And I thought to myself, looking at the gentleman who shared the story, that by the time that I was his age, because of the choices that his and previous generations had made, that unless things had changed and they didn't look like they were going to change, still there's a little bit of doubt in my head if they will, that by the time I was his age, that there would be no more hope for the future, that we would have pretty much damaged the Earth so badly that it would be irretrievable or irrecoverable. And that really stuck with me and has been further motivation for me to stay on this path. There are really some devastating problems that we're facing in the world, and not enough people know about the problems or the gravity of them. And there really is a desperate need to do something about it now. And the only way to address the great number of problems that we're facing, I think partly is to do so holistically and look at their interrelation, which too often we fail to do, but also to combine all of our efforts in order to stand a greater chance of solving these problems before they reach beyond a critical point. And not just young people, although I do believe that young people represent the greatest path and hope for change. They represent the most energy, enthusiasm, idealism, and hope. But adults also need to support young people and work with them actively in order to solve them. Only together will we change, will we really change the system and the problems that we're facing. And a young Filipino martyr said, "If we do not care, who will care? If we do not act, who will act? If not now, then when?"
If not now, then when? If not today, then why make your promises? A love declared for days to come is as good as none.
Thank you for joining us as we talked with Benjamin Quinto, Director of Global Youth Action Network.
For more information, log on to takingitglobal.org. Listener-sponsored Radio for Peace International is broadcast globally from Costa Rica.
I'm Scott Fratcher.
And I'm Allison Thompson.
If not now, then when? If not today, then why make your promises? A love declared for days to come is as good as none. Now love's the only thing that's free. We must take it where it's found. Pretty soon it may be costly. If not now, then when? If not today, then why make your promises? A love declared for days to come is as good as none. If not now, what then? We all must live our lives always feeling, always thinking the moment has arrived. If not now.